you don't know what's there, but you can feel, you can hear it growling, and you're like, I don't want to open this door. A lot of times after we open the door, it's a tiny little puppy.
You're listening to the Blacktop Banter Podcast, the premier podcast in the asphalt industry, made for contractors with contractors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Blacktop Banter. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode. Very excited about this one. This is a topic that you guys have heard me talk about a lot as of late, and we've had a couple guests now talk about this topic, but today's guest is Dr. Erin Craw. Erin completed her doctorate degree at Chapman University, studying communication with emphasis in health and interpersonal communication. She previously earned a bachelor's degree in communication and journalism from the University of Connecticut, with a master's degree in health communication from Fairfield University. Her research interests are at the intersection of health and interpersonal communication, more specifically, communication as it relates to social support, stigma, and resilience, especially in the workplace. Erin, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm very excited about this podcast.
It's an honor. Thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to dive in.
So we connected at Dirt World Summit with U-Turn Health, and I was so distraught because I got into town a little late, and the only thing on the docket that I really wanted to make sure I hit was this one, this segment that U-Turn put on there. And I think it was very important, but we were able to connect afterwards on the show floor. And I really wanted to get you in here because I have a lot of questions. I think every time we have a conversation about mental health, it always is insightful because it's a very personal thing. And there's different triggers and different circumstances that cause mental health issues. And every time I have a conversation, another perspective seems to add more knowledge and more insight into it. And I think that it allows our listeners and the people who find us that are suffering with this issue a little more comfort because they realize, hey, it's pretty common and there's ways to help yourself with it and help others in close proximity with it. So can we kind of dive into that a little bit? I don't want to waste too much time getting into it because I know this is what you and I were hoping to talk about. But in the construction industry, we work long hours. We're under a lot of stress, especially if you're the business owner, because you have a lot of people depending on you. And it takes a lot of variables to make a business successful. And there's a lot of pressure in a lot of scenarios that are high pressure. And I know while reading your description that you've helped out a lot with law enforcement and these types of things. So let's dive into it a little bit and tell us a little bit about the issue that keeps popping up and is coming to the surface.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is really becoming more and more discussed, which is fantastic. But we have so much more ground to cover in terms of really getting to a point where we talk about mental health in the workplace differently than we have in the past. And I guess what I mean by that is we've often historically looked at mental health almost in the same way that we look at mental illness. So using the same phrase as it's okay not to be okay, and my door is always open, and all of these things have kind of surfaced as we've started to talk about mental health more in the workplace. But what we're seeing still is that, and I'll give you an example of this. When I started the workshop at the event,
yep,
I asked everyone in the room, what's mental health? You've signed up for this workshop with U-Turn Health. It's about mental health and well-being. What is mental health? And I can tell you that 95% of the room, I did a couple of sessions, and this is every session, people would describe signs and symptoms of a mental health related challenge or a mental illness rather than talking about mental health. And that was just, it's so pivotal to really look at, why are we doing that? Why are we not talking about mental health in a positive way? When we say physical health, it's, I can run, I can, you know, I'm great at my job, I have my relationships, all these things that I'm like balancing and I'm physically fit.
Yeah.
But we don't think that way in mental health. We tend to think about mental health as being mental illness or being a mental health related injury, right? Or I'm depressed, I'm stressed. All of those things that surface as I ask people that basic question of what mental health is, they often veer very far away from what the actual definition of mental health is. And so just in a nutshell, mental health really is what it's encapsulating is your ability to be productive. Mm-hmm. It's your ability to contribute to your community, your family, society, to your team, right? With that, whatever project you're working on. It's your ability to really thrive, to be in a state. It's a state of well-being, and it's something that requires constant work. You have to put in work to be at a mentally healthy state. And so when we think about physical health, it's the same sort of notion, but we often don't think of them as the same. And so we're able to articulate, you know, if I was to ask you, like, how are you feeling? Are you physically well? You'd be like, yeah, I'm doing well, right? I work out, I eat healthy, I'm able to do X, Y, or Z. But when we talk about mental health, we just automatically talk about the negative. And so I think that's a huge piece of our conversation today, hopefully, and also where I think it's going in terms of trying to make some improvement. But back to your point about where we're kind of at right now, current day, I still feel like there is some, there's quite a few barriers, I will say, to having really effective conversations about mental health in the workplace, specifically around the construction space. And I think there's a number of different kind of layers that impact the construction industry specifically that are really important to highlight. One of them being this cultural element. Every industry, every organization is going to have their own culture. That's just an innate in any kind of system, right? So we're a part of all of these different systems. You and I are part of our family system, our community system, and our organizations, whatever we're belonging to. And so you have all of these kind of messages and norms and different things that become your sense of reality as a human being as part of those different systems. And so when you're in a culture that emphasizes being strong and tough, right? If you think about even the comparison from construction to law enforcement, that's pretty similar, right? This notion that to perform on the job, you have to be tough. You absolutely have to be, right? It's not an option. As someone in construction, you can't be not strong on the job, right? There's an expectation. And so, but what happens is then that message really starts to impact the perception of then how does that relate to my mental health? Mm-hmm. If I have to be physically strong all the time, then I guess my expectation is I also have to be mentally perfect all the time too, right? Because otherwise I can't handle it. I'm weak. I'm not going to be, you know, wanted on the job. When a next project comes around, are they going to think like, oh, you know, Marvin doesn't have his stuff together. So I guess let's just pick someone else. So you start to kind of ruminate and rethink over and over again about all of these different scenarios. And so now you have this intense fear of, if I can't perform because I'm overly stressed, I'm burnt out, I'm experiencing maybe some signs of depression or anxiety, fill in the blank, then what does that look like now for my career? And if you think about some of the elements that influence our mental health, and there's a lot of them, but you know, relationships, your sense of meaning is a huge one. And a lot of us will get that from our work. That's just kind of inherently how it works, right? We feel a sense of meaning from what we're contributing back to society. And a huge part of that is our work. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has to do with also family and relationships. But so that meaning could be coming from that job. And so that fear of, well, if I'm struggling, will that impact my job? If it impacts my job, there's my sense of meaning and connection. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's kind of this like domino effect.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it starts compounding.
So now you just have this, and that's where we get into this cumulative stress as being such a critical thing to think about and talk about, because it's not one stressor. There's often not one thing that has caused someone to experience a mental health related challenge or even being diagnosed with a condition. It's not this one day you had a really tough day,
right?
Because inherently we're able to cope with the normal stressors of life if we're at a healthy state. But it's the cumulative, right? So it's I'm stressed at home because of X, Y, or Z. Now I'm on this new project, and I know the construction space, just from the conversations I've had especially recently, is so deadline driven. And so now you have this pressure of completing the projects. I can't not have my stuff together, right? I know they always use that term, and I'll not swear on the podcast, but you know, that's what a lot of the people that I've been speaking with recently in this industry have said to me. You know, we have to have it together. Like, we have deadlines. We have to get the project done. And so now you have that pressure of, I can't speak out, but I'm still experiencing the stress. So I'm just building it. I'm just putting more onto my plate and not taking anything off. And so that becomes a really critical component of where we're at in terms of next steps to go through. And I think a lot of that has to do with how we're talking about mental health and normalizing that it's an incredibly important aspect of being able to perform on the job. So when you think about mental health, it impacts relationships, your communication, how you make decisions.
Yes,
so
for
you
sure.
on the job not being at your healthiest state, you're actually not performing to your highest level.
Right.
But we don't often associate it that way because we're so scared of, and this is across industries, that's why I'm saying we, because myself included, we get so nervous about if I'm not perfectly perceived as perfectly fine, right, all the time, then what does that look like for those different tasks that I have to do and you wanting to perform really well on the job when in reality, you're probably not performing at your highest level if you're not mentally healthy.
Right. So I'm going to unpack two things in that short statement you just made. The first part is this thing where I don't think people look at their mind as a body, right? Where if you're on the job and something happens where you hurt your knee, you take time off, you go see somebody because you make sure that you want to be in good shape with it and that it's going to turn out all right because you know that it's important for the rest of your career that we take care of this issue. We have a problem where we don't look at it that way. We just figure your mind is made how it's made. So if there's an issue with it, that's just how it is. And you have an issue, right? Like, and you're always going to have this issue when that's not the case. Something has happened, whether it's a trauma or something, and you didn't properly heal from it, right? So you didn't interpret how to heal from it. And I think part of it is like, I know if my knee hurts, I just take some time off of it, keep some weight off of it, and give it a little bit of ibuprofen, something. It's gonna turn around and I'm gonna be okay. This one is a lot harder to fix on your own because you can't really, you need guidance on how to fix this thing, right? Otherwise it just recurs and it's like that. It'd be like if you didn't fix your knee, it would just be this nagging pain over and over that would inhibit you from operating at your full potential. So I think you stating that and us being able to realize that that's the issue here, that it's not unrepairable. And it's not like how you are, that it's something that's like a body part and you can fix it if you have an issue or an ailment with it. The second part of that is where you hit the nail on the head with the culture within our industry, right? You are surrounded by guys who want to be men's men, right? They're probably got 5 o'clock shadows like myself and we got calluses on our hands and you know, there's a badge of honor with if you're the toughest, right? And not necessarily a bullying culture, but I'm sure there's a myriad of words that if somebody came to the back of a truck bed at the beginning of the day and say, hey guys, I'm really dealing with some issues here. I can imagine in our industry what would be said, right? By some of these insensitive people that don't understand what's going on. So there's a fear there. Like, I'm not going to do that. Therefore, I'm not talking to the people that probably depend on me and letting them know that I have an issue that I need help with so that I can be optimal in my performance for them, right? So there's a problem there because that's why you're hired. You're hired to perform at your optimum level because your company needs you to be able to do that. Same as if they had a piece of machinery that had a leaky hydraulic hose, they would get that thing fixed. Because they want to make sure that they can get their projects and property done. So they treat it with importance. I think the work that you're doing and some of our friends within the industry that have been on the podcast recently are making it normal for managers and business owners to look at mental health in that same regard as, hey, you guys want to perform very well. You need to make sure that you have your guys humming at optimum ability and that compounding effect of mental health issues, right? Whether it's maybe you have maybe you're insecure about whether or not you can, I don't know, lift a pallet of, or lift a bundle of shingles, right? So you already have an issue with it. And then you end up not being able to do it and you're worried about what people are going to say about it, right? And then also you're worried that somebody's going to say something to a superior that, hey, this guy can't perform well. You have this compounding interest. You get home. People are asking you how work is going and you say good even though it's not going good, right? So then you have another thing where you're like, oh, well, I'm hiding how bad it is, right? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it gets to be a compounding thing. And I think there's so many different variables and issues because everybody's in different situations that cause these things. The question I kind of have is, what do we do? Like, what do we do, Erin?
It's a loaded question. Yes. But I will talk about some strategies. And I think there's so much to be said about the physiological response to stress, to these things, because it is really hard to wrap your head around. And I will not pretend that it's not, to wrap your head around the fact that it's not my fault that I'm feeling a certain way. It's not my fault that I can't cope. It's truly not. It's chemical, right? Our brain is another, like you said, it's another body part. And so I think too, part of it is getting people the education that's needed, but so often left out of across industries. I'm an adjunct professor. I work for Uturn Health as a strategic account manager. I've had several kind of jobs and positions previously, and it really is not incorporated into workplace trainings in terms of what to expect when you are experiencing stress, when you are experiencing burnout. It's a physiological response, just like anything else. I mean, if you really break things down, and I'll give an example of this. I've taught a course called Argument and Advocacy, and basically you're teaching students at the college level how to have really strong arguments. So how to argue by really building in some research and being able to prepare something that makes a lot of sense, but that's backed by a lot of research and science. And so the reason I'm sharing that with you is because oftentimes they have speaking anxiety, right?
Well,
no one loves public speaking. And so I will show them the physiological response to almost like this fight or flight response that we have when we public speak.
Sure.
Speak in public, excuse me. And the reason I'm telling you that is because once they see that it's physiological, like, oh, it's my body reacting to a potential threat, right? Then they're like, whoa, I feel like, one, I feel better about myself.
Two,
I feel like now I have the foundational understanding of this. So I feel more confident in my ability to cope.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with stress and depression and anxiety and grief. When you have an understanding, we don't like to be out of the know as human beings, just in general, right?
Yep.
And there's different personality types. Like, I'm a type A, so I like to know everything all the time. Not everyone is like that, but just basic level human being, we like to be informed for the most part. We also love that sense of control over our own lives and our own environment. Now, when you've experienced maybe a response to grief, maybe a response to cumulative stress, maybe a response to stressors on the job that you're not used to, or trauma on the job, whatever it might be. Maybe you've had a physical injury and now you've had to cope with that and how that's impacting your life. So whatever it might be, if you don't have a foundational understanding of what's going on mentally in terms of your psychological well-being, it becomes so, you quickly start to think, what's wrong with me?
Yep.
It's all in my head. I'm making this up. Rather than kind of walking through the steps of, okay, well, I know that based on, you know, the actual science.
Yeah, the neurobiology of it. Yeah.
Neurobiology, you know, psychology, all of the different sciences that can really back up what I'm actually going through.
Yep.
That just helps you feel more in control. And so when you're experiencing a mental health challenge, you feel so out of control. And I've been there. I've seen family members be there, coworkers. You feel like I can't get a handle on anything. So you feel that sense of lack of control. And that's a lot of the reason why it spirals really fast for a lot of people, because you hate that feeling of not being in control. It's also why we tend to see a lot of people are hesitant to seek support, because they're thinking, I don't want one more layer of not feeling like I'm in control.
Oh, that makes sense.
We'll talk a little bit about that as well, different ways that strategies that you can help coworkers feel that sense of control. But that's a huge piece of it, is just understanding foundationally what's going on. And we skip over that. There's so many trainings in the workplace. I mean, there's just hundreds of different trainings. But what we're not really doing, and I've seen several mental health related trainings or health related trainings that kind of just brush over like sleep well and eat healthy and exercise.
Right.
Those are fantastic tips. But what we're not really getting at is, how do we really help someone understand what's happening when it does happen? And so I think that's a huge piece of it.
Yeah, I think, drink more water probably isn't the right answer. Trust me, it's going to help, but I don't think it's the right answer. Yeah. We need it for our neuroplasticity to work well. I think that that's the biggest thing, right? Is there's two things. It's one, it's for men and women maybe in the construction mm-hmm. space. It's embarrassing, right? Because you're just like, you don't want to be viewed by your peers and people within your culture as weak. No one wants it's to be scary. Viewed as weak, right? So, and then you have to take steps though that are vulnerable in order mm-hmm. to, if you don't understand what's going on, to heal from it. And I think the biggest thing is that there's not enough knowledge being put into people who were either before they encounter mental health mm-hmm. issues or when they do encounter mental health issues that tell them or teach them about chemical reactions in your brain to stressors. Mm-hmm. We're primal. We weren't meant thousands of years ago, we weren't meant to be in this environment, and our brain is trying to react with a chemical release that was meant for us to be in the wild hunting animals, right? Or being scared by predators or whatever. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with chemical mm-hmm. reactions for those things, but it's in the workplace, in a society that we've developed. And I think once, I've shared before on the podcast about my struggles at different times with mental health. And once I realized that that's what was going on, and that if somebody else was in my situation, their brain would release the same exact chemical and the same exact thing would happen to mm-hmm. them. Then I realized it's not even me. It's just how we're made, right? Exactly. So there's different situations we get in that you don't know is going to happen, or different situations that happen to you, whether it could be at home in your personal life or whatever. And then all of a sudden these things at work that didn't really bother you start to bother you even more. They compound. Mm-hmm. And if this isn't worth it over here, then this isn't worth it over here. And pretty soon you get to the point of, why do I exist? And mm-hmm. that's a tough one to start reeling yourself back from, because everybody wants to feel purpose, right? So that's the struggle that I think we have. But the biggest, best part of the first steps to getting better is knowledge and getting educated. And sometimes that's just listening to somebody talk about it and the light bulb going off of, oh, mm-hmm. this has nothing to do with that. It's literally chemical reactions in my brain to the situations I'm in.
I'm incredibly proud of the Blacktop Banner Edition seal coating unit, produced in partnership with KM International and available in both 550 and 700 gallon versions. Custom built on the same frame as their bulletproof hot boxes, I work closely with KM to design what I believe is the best seal coating unit on the market, a unit designed by a contractor for contractors. Learn more about the unit and to see a walkthrough of the entire unit by visiting kminternational.com.
If you're serious about efficiency and performance, listen up. The Kraftco SuperShot 125 is not just a melter, it's a strategic pavement maintenance advantage. Quick startups, fume-free, automatic agitator shutoff, a splash-proof lid, and pumping on demand, these features are essential for any serious asphalt maintenance contractor. So don't settle for mediocrity. Elevate your game with the Kraftco SuperShot line of melters by visiting kraftco.com today.
In my opinion, Dynapack CC900G Roller is the best roller on the market for driveway and small parking lot paving contractors. The seismic technology in these rollers is unbeatable for the smoothness and compaction they provide, and I choose the Dynapack CC900G over the little yellow roller that you're used to seeing every single time. But don't just take my word for it. Check them out in person at Pavex and World of Asphalt, or visit Dynapack.com to find a dealer near you.
Hey, Blacktop Banner fans. This is Michael with Aquafault. Say goodbye to potholes and roadway damage without the need for large crews, heavy equipment, or toxic chemicals. Aquafault is the only permanent repair material for asphalt and concrete that uses water. And installation is simple. Just pour, add water, and tamp. It's that easy. An Aquafault repair can be open to traffic immediately and fully sealed within 24 hours. Plus, the product is backed by a 3-year warranty and made in the USA. Visit aquafault.com. That's A-Q-U-A-P-A-U-L-T PHALT.com to learn more.
In the past year, Jobber has been our CRM of choice at Wiscode, and it's made our world exponentially better efficiency-wise. The request to quote and quote to invoice process is seamless and professional. The scheduling aspect keeps us on point and the team leaders moving throughout the day from project to project, while the timesheet feature tracks the team members' hours. For our small seal coating company, it has helped build the solid foundation we can scale from. Jobber is now a sponsor of Blacktop Banter and helps bring this show to you. With this partnership, Jobber is offering an exclusive savings to BB listeners of 20% off for 6 months. To take advantage of this, find the Jobber link in the show description and get to improving your process today.
Hi, contractors. It's Kyla from Wiscoat. We use Stencil Plus for all of our pavement marking stencils, alphabet letters, numbers, directional arrows, handicap markings, you name it. We use it and we get it all from Stencil Plus. Right now, for a limited time, you can save 10% on your stencil order by using code BB10 during checkout at stencilplus.com or by calling 877-372-6055.
Contractors, you need to make it easy for potential customers to reach you. Get a custom phone number from the 800 Pavement Network and plaster it on the side of your trucks and rigs, and I guarantee you'll see increases in leads and jobs booked. Get yours by calling 1-800-728-3636.
World of Asphalt is the leading asphalt trade show and conference, and will be taking place on March 25th through the 27th, 2024, in Nashville, Tennessee. From mainline to maintenance, the show will be your one-stop shop to see everything the asphalt industry has to offer. Registration is now open, and listeners can save 20% off registration with the code BB20 when they register on worldofasphalt.com.
Absolutely. Yeah, that response is physiological. It's not something that you're making up. It doesn't make you weak. Mental health related challenges do not discriminate. So it's not picking on a certain person, you know.
Never heard that. That's a good one. I've never heard that before.
It does not discriminate. You will react to different things. So someone, you know, let's say, for example, you can go back to the construction space or even first responders. Anything you're experiencing on the job, while someone might find that traumatic or particularly stressful, you and I can go to the same scene, we can work on the same project, and we might respond differently.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that that person has never struggled with something else. And so I think what happens is it's really easy to kind of, when you are struggling, and I've been here myself personally, when you are struggling, I lost my dad when I was 20 years old. And so I experienced a lot of grief at a young age. And I had, as you can imagine, a really hard time relating to other people at that point because I was in college and no one else had lost their parent before. And so I'm there and I'm miserable because I just lost my dad. And so I felt like I would look over my shoulder left and right and think, shoot, like I'm not supposed to be feeling this way. I'm not supposed to be struggling. I'm supposed to be where they're at. And it becomes so hard. It's like you can't possibly put blinders on. People use the term a lot, stay in your own lane. Yeah. It's nearly impossible when you're struggling. And I can totally relate to that. And so I think that becomes really important to think about, you know, for anyone listening that said, you know, I feel like I'm the only one, or I feel like I don't want to speak out because everyone else is fine around me. And I've been there and I know that feeling. And I know that can be even more difficult. I wasn't in the construction industry, so I can't really even fathom how difficult that must be when, on top of looking left and right and feeling like everyone else is fine, there's also this inherent culture of suck it up, pick yourself up, brush it off. And so now you just get so isolated in what you're feeling. And isolation is one of the highest risks for so many things, suicide, depression, increased anxiety. And there's just so much out there that argues and really suggests that isolation is just so unbelievably unhealthy for your physical and your mental health. And so one of the things I wanted to talk with you about here is some of the strategies. I know we kind of veered away from that, but I would like to come back to that because I think it's so critical. What do you do? And I think one of the first things that I always try to stress, and I think definitely, again, across industries, but really with the construction industry, is relationship building. And that's going to sound so basic to probably everyone that's listening, but let me have a second to unpack that a little bit. So relationships are really the foundation for being able to recognize what we refer to as a change in behavior, as being really critical for recognizing if someone has a specific mental health related challenge, and that can be anything. So I use that term really, really broadly. So someone could be experiencing grief. They could be just struggling with something at work and at home, right? The two tend to bleed into each other. We tend to see a lot of spillover from work into life and life into work and et cetera. You know, we use those terms like leave your job at the door. That's really hard to do right. too. So, you know, those types of phrases sound great in an ideal world, but I'm not going to, BS anyone on here. I think those are really hard things to do. So with that being said, I think relationship building is probably the most critical component of being able to help each other. And a lot of the times, you know, you can, I think training is important. I think education is so critical. We just talked about that. But without also making sure that those day-to-day conversations and interactions with peers and with supervisors, even more importantly, are getting enhanced to the level of normalizing mental health conversations. And I'll share what I mean by that.
Yeah.
They have to go hand in hand. It can't just be, oh, we offered this one training one time for Suicide Prevention Month and we're good to go, right? It can't be a check the box approach, but unfortunately we see that quite a bit. So in terms of that relationship building, we want to be able to identify if someone's changed their behavior in some way, because that's an opportunity then to approach them and to see what's going on. And that's not to say that any change of behavior means someone's deeply struggling. They could just be having a really difficult day, but they're okay. However, it's an opportunity, like I said. So it's a reason to go up to someone and approach. I would like to talk about too, and I think this is really critical, there are barriers to people even approaching. So it's not even just, there's not only barriers to people seeking support and wanting to get help and talk about that, but there's also barriers in terms of other people approaching their peers or their subordinates or anyone else on their team. And I've had a lot of discussions about this, definitely at the summit for sure. We talked about this in the workshop. And one of the major things is that people are scared to say the wrong thing.
Oh, for sure.
I'm sure that you've heard this before. Maybe you can relate to that. It's, I don't want to make it worse. I'm scared that I'm going to say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing. The other part, a lot of people will say, you know, they're not really bothering anyone. Just leave them alone.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of that. And none of that is coming from a malicious standpoint. I've never heard someone say like, oh, I just don't care about them. Right? It's more so this, like, I don't know what to say, how to say it, what to do. And so I think we also need to start talking about how do we get these strategies to people on a regular basis so they feel really confident and competent in having the conversation? You know, I'm not going to be able to have those conversations with the boots on the ground. So how do we get that message across to them? And one of the biggest things, I'll go back to the checking for change in behavior. So changes in behavior can look like showing up late when you're always early, or being disengaged. Disengaged is a huge one. That could be disengaged at work. Maybe you're super talkative and chatty on the job site, or you have lunch together all the time, and now you're just kind of slowly drifting, right? And I'm sure you've seen that in your own experience. You know, whether it's yourself or someone else, just kind of slowly start to disengage, not talk as much, not be as, you know, not be their normal self, quote unquote. Maybe they're disinterested in hobbies that they really cared about. I know you and I were just talking before this call, like sports, right? If I'm really into sports, I'm always talking about sports. I'm going to sports games, or you're watching, you know, wrestling with your son or whatever it might be. And then you slowly stop doing that. That's an opportunity to kind of get more information. Like, why is that changing? That tends to be a sign that you might be struggling with something going on with your mental health. So we use what I call I statements. So I noticed blank. So if I, let's say that you were showing up late, you're usually always early, show up on the job site. I know you guys wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning. So let's say you start strolling in at like 5:30 and you're late, or you start calling out, or, you know, we talked about communication as being a key component of like a repercussion, if you will, for when you are struggling with mental health. So maybe you're just not communicating well. Maybe your decision-making is off. We talked about that too.
Yep.
So all of these things are happening. So I would approach you and say, you know, Marvin, I noticed that you've been showing up late. I noticed that a couple of things have been different. I want to make sure that you're doing okay. How's everything going with your son? Has he had any wrestling meets anytime soon?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very different than what we, you know, often rely on. And I got a lot of chuckles in the room when I said this in the workshop.
Yeah.
I said, you know, one of the most common phrases is, are you okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you say back to that?
It's the general response of, yeah, I'm good. I'm fine.
You would always say you're fine,
every
right?
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
And so I said that in the room full of them for the workshop, and I got so many chuckles because they all were like, oh, you're right. Yeah, like I would say I'm fine. Mm-hmm. So if we know that, we have to stop asking that question mm-hmm. and really shift the way we're approaching and shift the way we're talking about it. And one of the best ways to do that is to just use those I statements. Mm-hmm. So I noticed this, I care about you, I'm checking in, how's this going? Or can I support you in any way? Do you want to talk about it further? I mean, there's so many ways to shift the question to get them to tell you more, because here's what happens. If you ask if someone is okay, they say they're fine. Where do you go with that?
Yeah.
What's the next step there? Yeah, right?
There's nothing else. You almost have to be prying to get anything else after that.
Exactly.
Point, right?
And so that, and people don't want to do that. And right. I understand that. And so it becomes this barrier almost. Asking that question kind of shuts down the conversation. And so it's really critical to think about how you're approaching, how you're asking questions to validate what they're going through. A lot of the times too, and this is very common in the construction space. And again, it's not coming from a malicious standpoint by any means. It's coming almost more so from that cultural element of we're tough, rub some dirt on it kind of perspective. And so a lot of people will say things like, oh, I've been through worse. Like, when I was on the job I was so stressed and it was worse. Like, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. And the reason that that's not helpful, which I'm sure you can imagine, is you're not validating. You're not giving them an opportunity to share and feel. And so now that person feels like, okay, I guess I should just be fine. So I'll just shut my mouth and now not bring it up again.
Yes. I've never even thought of it that way, but yes, absolutely. I think there's never that response, right, Aaron? Like, somebody comes up, they're late, and you go to approach them. Most common in our industry, and maybe all across the board. Maybe I don't want to put everybody there, but when that would happen, there would be a there would either be an awareness that they're late by their superior, their boss, or mm-hmm. whoever, or it would be brought to the attention of superiors and be like, who's going to take care of this? Right. So then someone's up and they're like, hey, you've been late every single day. We can't have this anymore. Like, we got to start, you got to start being on time.
Right.
In their mind, what may have happened already is that they barely care anyways. Right.
Yes.
In their personal life, they're like, nobody cares. And then you get here and you're not even viewed as a person. You're viewed as a tool that's supposed to be here on time. And they're like, you got to get here on time. Like, that's what you
have
to do.
Absolutely.
So then there's just this thing of like, nobody cares. Right. Like,
exactly.
I like your approach when you talk about it this way, because you're already feeling isolated. And not only are you if you approach somebody this way, not only are you being able to let them relieve and talk about it, but you're also letting them not feel isolated because you actually care. Right.
Yes. Like, you cared enough to notice.
Yes. Yeah. You actually care. And sometimes that's the thing that starts unraveling the thread that has you wound so tight, is just that, oh, I'm not alone. Somebody does care and they're actually going to listen to this. Okay.
Yes.
And we get started with it.
And it's so different too. When you were giving that example, you said, you know, you were showing up late, you were doing this. That's a perfect example of, if you just shift it to more of a, I notice this and I care about you, so I want to make sure you're okay, versus, because to your point, they're already dealing with so much at that one moment, right? And so if you add on, now they're in trouble at work and it's because of something that they might be struggling with, that's actually an opportunity for you to intervene and get them help before it becomes a crisis, or before they quit, or before, you know, they're at risk for suicide, X, Y, or Z. I mean, there's so many negative outcomes, but we're not really getting to that point yet of thinking about that as being addressing mental health. I think conceptually, from an industry perspective, based on my conversations in the past couple of months and definitely at the event, there's a lot of this view that having mental health, and I'm using air quotes, mental health related conversations has to be like this high level psychology.
Yeah.
I need to be a master's level therapist to have this conversation. But it's so not true. It really is relationship building. It's getting to the point where you're able to approach. Those are not hard things to ask by any means. We're just not used to it yet. You know, we're so used to relying on, are you okay? And just being like, oh, they said they're fine. What am I going to do about it? Right.
Yeah.
You can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Yeah. We have to get away from that perception and really start to say, I'm going to approach. And then, the better even more important, I guess, point here is there has to be consistent follow-up. So the first time that you ask, the first time I approach you, you might be standoffish. You might not want to talk about it. Actually, probably 9 times out of 10, you won't. And that's okay. But you have to be patient and you have to be consistent in your follow-up. So maybe I say, I'm glad you're okay right now. I'm going to check in with you next week. I just care. I just want to make sure you're doing okay. You know, just want to see how you're doing. And then actually follow through. The reason that's so important is because you're demonstrating to that person, again, that you care, authentically, genuinely care about their well-being, not just checking a box because they showed up late and you have to reprimand them, but you're caring enough to go to them, not once, but twice, to check in again, a third time if needed, but show them like, this is something I actually care about. This is not like, oh, this happened one time. I just checked in with you. You said you're fine. Now I'm leaving you alone. And the other part of that is, this goes back to that relationship building. The more that you're able to get out of your conversations about that person as a human. What I mean by that is learning about spouses' names, learning about hobbies, learning about their children and what they're interested in. What are they spending their time doing outside of work? Because you can then use that to approach, because a lot of the times, again, we're nervous to approach. We don't want to say the wrong thing. We don't know what to do. So part of that could be, you know, hey, how's wrestling been going? You know, that's so much better than saying, are you okay? And getting an I'm fine answer. Now you can start to talk. And then maybe you say like, oh, it's not going that well. Like, I don't know. Like, I haven't been going because I'm fighting with my spouse and I'm dealing with this and this is happening. And then all of a sudden it starts to open up because you're demonstrating, I care about you, not just your performance on the job. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what happens is, and I can speak from my own experience, like anybody who is close, they know that I like kind of clam up, right? And early on, people be like, yeah, you need to talk to somebody. I'm like, nobody's going to understand this. In my mind, I'm like, nobody's going to understand what's going on. And then just having that conversation with them made me feel better. Right. So it's ridiculous to think about it that way. But literally being able to get my thoughts out of my mind, out of my mouth, into somebody else's brain, and to have them reciprocate a response to me that actually felt better than an SOP. Was like, oh, I'm human and they're human. This is nice. Right. And if you feel comfortable with somebody, truly befriend somebody, I'm willing to tell you anything, right, about my life. And if I can do that and it develops a relationship like you spoke about where they're like, hey, man, you can call me anytime. Like, if you need to come over, we're going to be doing this. Come hang out. Like, let's don't be alone. If you don't want to be alone, we can talk about this and talk through it. And I think here's the thing. When you don't know what's on the other side of the door that you're about to open, it can scare the crap out of you.
Sure.
Right? You don't know what's there, but you can feel, you can hear it growling, and you're like, I don't want to open this door. A lot of times after we open the door, it's a tiny little puppy, right? And it was like, yeah, there was something there, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And I think that if we can just get people to start, if they're in a mental health, dealing with a mental health issue or moment, if you can get them to know that you're there when you open the door, they open the door and see what's on the other side, I think that helps out a lot. And most of the time we make things a lot bigger and a lot more damaging in our minds than they are. We put so much of our identity into these things that give us these stressors that if we took down maybe if we took down the level of how important they actually are in the overall picture of our lives, they wouldn't carry such weight and have such an impactful thing, right, on us. So I think some of these strategies and these techniques you're talking about are fantastic because they're personal ones that we can do ourselves, but also in proximity, in the workplace, you can do those as well. And I think that they're great strategies that you're talking about here because it's not high level. You don't have to go through the SOP. And if there was an SOP for it and you let your team know that, then they'd be like, oh, they're doing the SOP, right? So literally it has to be genuine stuff. And you know what we do in the construction space, Aaron, is we do safety meetings. A lot of companies are like mandatory safety meetings every week. So we check on everything. We check all the equipment. We make sure everyone has their personal protective equipment on. So we do these things because they're so important. We want people to be safe so that they're healthy. But we don't do this. We do
What about the cumulative stress?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
decision it's making, protocol. Right? It's all of that is related to your mental health and well-being. So I'm so with you. I think that that safety component needs to start to shift, and I've seen some good progress. Right, we were included in that at the summit. I mean, there's definitely been some trend that way, which is fantastic. But it really does come down to your regular Tuesday conversation that you're having with a buddy at work, creating that connection so that people know that mere perception. We know based on research, and I'll try not to get too into the research nitty gritty here. But
I like it. Send it.
Okay. Yeah. I'll nerd out for a second, but we know based on research that actually the mere perception that support is available is more impactful than the actual support someone provides.
Oh.
Wrap your head around that. So just knowing that when I'm struggling, I have people I can go to if I need support is more powerful than probably the support that they're actually providing. So our view that we have people in our corner, so to speak, actually helps us appraise the situation, meaning evaluate the situation as less threatening or less stressful because we know we have people to go to and ways to cope. So when we experience like something stressful, our bodies view it as a threat, right? This is going back to the physiological. So we view that there's a threat to our control, to our autonomy, to so many different parts of who we are. And so when we feel that threat, we start to panic if we don't have the coping strategies. Mm-hmm. And so that goes back again to how do we make sure that there are those coping strategies? That could be its own podcast and its own class. But if we don't have that, we need to know that we have people that can support us. But in a culture where we emphasize things like being invincible, being strong, being tough, sucking it up, then the perception that people are going to support us if we struggle with a mental health related challenge is non-existent. We don't think that people are. And so now add on that you're not able to cope. The threat is too great. So now you're not coping effectively and you just spiral from there. Man. And one of the parts of, and I know we have to wrap up. I feel like I could be here for hours.
You're going to have to come back. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the biggest pieces that people have asked about and we've talked about across different construction organizations, and I've had the honor of talking to so many in the past couple of months here, is how do we get them to resources? How do we get them to, you know, we're not all going to be mental health therapists, counselors, right? We're not going to all go down that path, but you as a peer are the most helpful person to your colleagues, especially from a leadership perspective too, right? As a leader and as a peer, you're probably, you know, the boots on the ground first step. And so one of the biggest things that you can do is either share if you've struggled before, and it doesn't have to be in depth, right? I can say something like, I can't know exactly what you're going through, but I can promise you that I have definitely felt X, Y, or Z on the job, or I've definitely experienced similar things. I can share a little bit about what helped me cope with that, or I can also share some of the resources that our organization offers. Mm-hmm. Would you like that information? The reason I say it that way is one, because remember, we don't want to compare in the sense that we think that we know exactly what they're going through, because no one will ever know, right? And so we need to also get that out of our vocabulary. That's something that we teach a lot in mental health first aid, is you never want to say, I totally understand what you're going through. I understand exactly what and you might be able to relate because you've been on the job or you're in the construction space for like 40 years. I get that. But what you're actually doing is not validating that person in their own experience. And so you want to say something like, I can definitely relate to feeling something similar. I don't know exactly what you're going through, but I want to learn more about it. And I can also share some of the things that helped me, or I can share some of the resources, and then ask them if they want that. That's so critical, because I talked about autonomy and control, right? Human beings, we like options. We like to be in the driver's seat. When we're struggling, we feel like we're very much in the passenger seat of our own life.
Yes.
So if you can help that person feel more into that passenger seat, shift them back over to driving, you can do that by saying, I know some options. Why don't we work through this together? I can help you. Do you want it? Versus saying like, listen, Marvin, you've been showing up late. I don't know what's going on with you. You need to get help. You need to go to the EAP. You got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Very different, because now I'm saying you're in the driver's seat. I just want to help you. I want to help guide you. And it's so much more impactful for so many reasons.
Wow. Yeah. You know what you're describing, Aaron, is for somebody like me and my peers in the construction space, is hope. Literally, like, because you feel like when you're in it, there is zero. Right. But
you're all by yourself.
Yeah. But being able to dissect it and break it down the way we have allows you to target areas in the process and strategies within the process to, like you said, take them from the passenger seat back in the driver's seat, mm-hmm. let them feel some relief, right? To feel more in control. And I think that that's the key to recovering, from a mental health injury, as we kind of started out as, right? And it's the same thing as like physical therapy, right? If you yes. injure yourself, well, this is going to be our process for coming out of it. I want to have you back. I know we're winding down and we got to get down here.
Yes,
I want to have
sure.
you back because we're going to be able to get into the second leg of this. But I think we were filled with, the podcast was filled with some great information and status of what mental health issues look like, some tactics mm-hmm. that we can do to recognize that, and then some simple things using I statements and whatnot to help start moving in that direction. And the one of the last things you spoke about was just the perception that help is there is, to me, is like insurance when you drive your vehicle around.
Exactly. Right?
Like you don't even want to drive Perfect. If you don't have insurance, right?
Perfect example.
But yeah. if you know, like, hey, I'm covered if I'm an idiot and wreck this thing, I'm going to be okay because I got insurance, yes. so it'll be covered. And I think that like that's almost the same perception of that is like, okay, we have something here and a place to go. And I know that there are people who are going to help me if I run into issues, because to be honest with you, we know what bothers us when we, mm-hmm. when we're having mental health and what is bothering us, but we don't want to go after it because we're scared of what that might do to us. But if you yes. know that you have support there and you have people that are always going to be there and are going to make sure you're okay when you start going down this journey, it allows you to start taking steps that way, right?
So definitely. And that's not going to happen overnight, right? I think the biggest piece of that is everything is communication. So you have to start the messaging that's going to create that perception, right? We can't just say like, oh, we're here for you, or like our door is always open, or those types of phrases. You have to demonstrate genuine, authentic care. Right. And that comes from those day-to-day interactions where you're really building. Like this is not going to be a flip of the switch, unfortunately. I wish it could be. Mm-hmm. But to build that perception, that insurance that you just described, you have to have that consistent check-in, consistent follow-through, because then when I go to think about, well, who can I go to if I'm struggling? I'm like, oh, well, Marvin checks in with me like on a regular basis when I'm fine. So I'm trust him enough to go to him when I am struggling. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it completely makes sense. And how thankful would a person be? It's bad. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It can get very, very bad. How thankful would a person be to know that they get some type of pressure relief valve in a genuine friend that, or genuine person that really wants to help them and cares?
You might be the first person. Cares. Yeah.
You might be the first person. And even if you're the only person, I mean, what a responsibility, but what a great, to me, it adds value being that person for other people,
yes.
Which is why I asked you to be on here and on the podcast. And we post quite a bit, whether it's little clips or different things about mental health, because we want our audience to be able to reach out. Like I put my personal phone number on our story sometimes because I'm like, just talk straight to me. Like if you call me or text me, because there's nothing more important than if you're at that point and think you have nowhere to go, because I've been there. Call me. I'll drop anything and everything at any time to be able to at least listen to you, and hopefully I can relate some. And if not, just let her rip. I'll listen and you can tell me whatever you want to. So
lucky to have you. That is
Where can we go, Aaron, to learn more? U-Turn Health or where are some resources that we can go to?
Absolutely. So definitely uturnhealth.com for sure. We have an app. We're coming out with a specific one for construction. So we're really excited
That's
about
very
that.
Exciting.
Yeah, I'm super hyped. I will definitely share all of that great detail with you. You can definitely also please find me on LinkedIn. Would love to answer any and all questions. U-Turn Health does a lot of trainings related to this. We're really trying to build that part out. One of the workshops, obviously, that you'd mentioned early on was very much this, meant to have not just me lecture, but me to have conversations to kind of start, how do we start to incorporate this into a job site? What does this mm-hmm. look like? So very hands-on, very much meant to be interactive. So we're always doing those at U-Turn Health. So go to uturnhealth.com, find more information there. Also my LinkedIn, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
What would be one overall arching piece of advice that you would give to anybody listening?
Yeah, my piece of advice to leave all of you with would be to start being more intentional and mindful. And what I mean by that is start to really notice other people. I know that's important, but also really hard sometimes to do because we get into the grind, right? We're waking up. You're waking up at like 3 a.m. not myself included, but you know, you're waking up super early. You're getting to the job site, you're doing your work, and then you got to hustle home to pick up your kids and you got to make it. I mean, there's so many things that keeps you on this like high level, very fast pace.
Yeah.
But, and the reason that I'm highlighting that is because if you're not spending a couple of minutes, even seconds every day, noticing other people that you're working with, having a check-in conversation, hi, how's it going? How was your weekend? And really listening to what they tell you, not like, hey, how's it going? Fine. How are you? Okay. Now move forward. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is what we do. Mm-hmm. So getting away from that and being more intentional, even if it's with one interaction per week for a couple of weeks, just to notice other people, because that's a huge part of what I just described in terms of those strategies. So be intentional, start to notice people a little bit more. Maybe the challenge for you is to have a side conversation with one person every week.
Yeah.
That sounds simple, right? 2 minutes of your time every week and just build from there and really be engaged with that person. Engagement is key, right? Yeah. If you're sharing about your son and wrestling and I forget that, you know, in the next week I ask you and I seem like I have no idea what you're talking about, I didn't really listen to you. So take the time to be engaged. Promise yourself for 2 minutes, I'm going to talk to Marvin and be all there. Nowhere else I'd rather be for 2 minutes than talk to you. Soak that in and then you build.
Yeah. Great piece of advice. Absolutely. I think the stigma around doing that, especially in the construction space, is detrimental. And it's been around for a while. Let's help get rid of that, because it is you will be more productive. I promise, guys. Yes. We're gonna make it's more money. Effective. I promise,
and you'll
guys. We're gonna make more money. I promise. If more you got money. Everybody, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And you'll notice too in that advice, like I didn't say go up to them and ask how their mental health is. You know what I'm saying? And
for sure.
But I think people think that's what I'm saying, but it's really just checking in on their well-being rather than like, you don't have to go ask them psychology questions, right? So we got to push away from that. And I think that's huge.
Be a friend.
Yes.
And be a genuine friend. That
start with high.
Yeah, start with high for sure. All right. Well, I really appreciate you joining us. Dr. Erin Craw was our guest today. She's currently working as a strategic account manager for clients in the public sector at U-Turn Health, and is also a mental health first aid instructor. Thank you so much for joining me on this conversation, and I look forward to our next one. I'm actually going to send you a link right now to join us again so we can schedule it out.
Yes, I would love that.
You go ahead and schedule out a few more months out, and we'll go ahead and join you again here on Blacktop Banter. You've heard a lot today about having people in your proximity that ask questions and interact with you quite a bit. One of the major goals that we have here and have done within the last year is create a mastermind group, a group of friends, the Blacktop Banter Success Group. In that group, we chat. There's a 24/7 chat. So we talk to each other all the time. We share about life and different things, business, all aspects of being a business owner or being in the asphalt industry. And we do 3 calls a month. So we check in on each other on Tuesday evenings. We would love for you to join us. You can go to blacktopbanter.com/BBSG, and that'll take you directly to the Blacktop Banter Success Group page for you to learn more, or you can just navigate it from blacktopbanter.com. And while you're there at the Blacktop Banter website, feel free to sign up for our newsletter. It's on the landing page. The newsletter is chock full of articles from contractors like you, like me, talking about all types of things within the season that we're in within the industry, as well as some words from our sponsors who we couldn't post Blacktop Banter without. So they will be very grateful to see you there too. And as always, here at Blacktop Banter, for myself, Marvin, and Dr. Erin Craw, we speak asphalt. Peace. Hey everybody, Marvin here from Blacktop Banter. And if you enjoy the podcast and what we've been bringing to the industry, you can support us through a one-time or recurring donation at blacktopbanter.com. There we have a support tab. You click that and choose your path from there. If you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do us a favor and leave a review there for us as well. As always, we speak asphalt, and thanks for your support. This episode of Blacktop Banter is brought to you by Crafto, the world's leading manufacturer of packaged pavement preservation materials and equipment for the asphalt industry. Learn more at craftco.com.